The Washington Wizards have won the NBA draft lottery. They get the number one pick in the draft. They're in the driver's seat, baby. Maybe they're taking AJ. Maybe the Jazz at two are moving up. The Grizzlies at three. The Bulls at four. The Pacers lost their pick to the Clippers. So much happened. Today, I'm going through the winners and losers of the draft and then a full first round mock draft. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Before we get to my first round mock draft, some winners and losers from the draft lottery. Obviously, the big winner is the Washington Wizards. They're in the driver's seat, baby, right? Like, I assume they take AJ DiBonsa with the one pick, and I will have them taking DiBonsa in my mock draft coming up. But hey, Utah at two, what are you going to give me for AJ DiBonsa? What you going to give up? Memphis at three, Chicago at four. You want AJ? How many future picks are you giving me? I think Washington is in a very, very intriguing position because Boozer fits there. Peterson fits there. I can't wait to see what they do. Obviously, Utah, Memphis, Chicago, they're winners moving into the top four. The Clippers taking the pick from the Pacers. Oh, my God. Indiana. I wonder how much regret they feel losing that pick to the LA Clippers. I would imagine quite a lot because, hey, with the fifth pick, you could have gotten more than Ivica Zubac. But hey, I mean, you do you, Indiana. That's disappointing for them, I'm sure. It's disappointing for Pacers fans after this waste of a year. And now you lose your first round pick. No reward. There's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. The Clippers get the reward. I bet Adam Silver is both a winner and a loser. He is a winner because he doesn't have to deal with the onslaught of negativity with the Thunder moving up. He gets to move forward with his 3-2-1 lottery proposal plan or something resembling it without fans and media and executives losing their minds. But he's a loser in the sense that, hey, Kawhi Leonard, aspiration, Steve Ballmer, you guys got rewarded after this mess of a year. Damn, I'm sure he's not super happy about that one. And the Clippers, of course, are winners. They are in a position now where they are at a crossroads and they could go any number of directions. Do they want to build young? Do they want to trade Kawhi? I can't wait to see what they do. We'll get a little bit more into the Pacers and some of those thoughts during the mock draft and definitely throughout the week as well, because this changes things league-wide in the NBA. Another big winner, the New Orleans Pelicans, specifically Joe Dumars. Dumars must have been sweating bullets when Mark Tatum, the NBA Deputy Commissioner, is pulling up cards, Dallas comes up, and then after that, it's like, okay, it can't be Atlanta that moves up. It can't be Atlanta. And it wasn't Atlanta. Atlanta has the eighth pick in the draft. Joe Dumars, I think he can live with and stomach the result of moving up 10 spots, getting Derek Queen, and giving up the eighth pick. If it had been a top four pick, boy, poor Pelicans fans. Would have been chaos if that happened. Of course, the Hawks, the flip side of that, they're losers. It's disappointing. You had a 40% chance of moving into the top four, which was the collective sixth best odds. That did not happen. Other than that, everything's pretty chalk afterwards. Dallas at 9. We'll get into that with the mock draft. Milwaukee at 10. Golden State at 11. 12 OKC. Thunder fans, they're going to win no matter what. The 12th pick in that range, they've taken Steven Adams, Cason Wallace, Jalen Williams. They're probably going to get another all-star caliber player at 12. All right, then number 13, Miami Heat. Number 14, Charlotte Hornets. And before we get into the mock, quick word here. Tomorrow on the show, I have a very special guest. We're going to dive way deeper into some of these winners and losers, what the ripple effects are from the results of lottery night, what we're hearing as well. I'm sure over the next 24 hours, we're going to be hearing some things about which teams like what are they thinking, what are their organizational objectives, and we're going to be talking about a lot else tomorrow as well on the show. But today, let's get into my full first round mock draft, starting off with the Washington Wizards. This one's got to be obvious. The Wizards take AJ DiBonsa with the number one pick, unless they get a big offer to try to move down. Utah's at number two. We'll see there. But AJ DiBonsa, the scoring ability, you put him next to Alex Sarr long-term with Keyshawn George and Trey Johnson, Will Riley, you know, Bilal Coulibaly. He's exactly what they're missing. And I think even though AJ DiBonsa didn't necessarily look overjoyed, after the Wizards pick was announced, I think this is a really good basketball fit for him because Trae Young and Anthony Davis being there helps alleviate the pressure on him to have to be the guy early in his career. So he's going to be able to develop, figure things out, and maybe he'll say, you know what, screw this, I want to be in Utah. Let's push our way there. I would not rule that out either. So I wouldn't rule that out because Utah Jazz are number two, and that makes things super intriguing here. The Jazz owner, Ryan Smith, is a BYU alum. He is a BYU donor as well. I bet you Ryan Smith wants AJ DiBonsa after everything he saw at BYU this past year. And now the Wizards are in a position at number one where they can say, oh, so you want AJ DiBonsa? What are you going to give us to get him? Because for the Wizards, I think Cameron Boozer is arguably a better fit for the team and with Alex Sarr long-term in the front court. Arguably, it's not 100%, but arguably a better fit for the Wizards. And if I'm them, I would really try to hold the Jazz over a barrel and just shake them loose for as many assets as possible to move down one spot. Then the Jazz get DiBonsa at one, and then the Wizards get Boozer at two. But we're going to stick to the order as is. And then the number two pick, the Utah Jazz, I've got them taking Darren Peterson. I think if the Jazz stay in this number two spot, you look at their roster already, Jaren Jackson Jr., they got Lauri Markkanen. They're likely to bring back Walker Kessler. You're telling me Cameron Boozer or Caleb Wilson is going to fit in this mix here? I think this is a team that they have Ace Bailey as well on that front court. They have Cody Williams. They have Bryce Sensabaugh, Keyonte George, these on-ball guys. I think Darren Peterson, with his versatility on-ball and off-ball, just makes sense on this roster to me. And for the Utah Jazz, historically, you look back at what Danny Ainge and Austin Ainge did for years running the Boston Celtics. They drafted high-ranked high school players who underwhelmed in college. They drafted Avery Bradley, Jared Sullinger, Gerald Green, like a lot of guys, some hits, some misses, but they oftentimes don't overvalue 30-something games of college. They look at the high school production, the international production. They look at the all-star game production where these guys are playing the AAU production together. And Darren Peterson in those games, you watch his high school stuff, I think he'd be the number one pick. He might end up the number one pick. There's a real possibility of that. So don't rule that out one bit with Peterson going number one. Don't rule that out. And for the Jazz here at number two, they might be sad to not get DiBonsa, but we joke about the Jazz trying to move up to number one. What if the Jazz actually don't want DiBonsa? What if they actually want Peterson? Or what if they actually want Boozer? But I think Peterson here is the right choice for the Utah Jazz. Number three, the Memphis Grizzlies. I'll tell you what, this is one of the dream fits, in my opinion. Cameron Boozer to the Memphis Grizzlies with the third pick. Pair him in that front court next to Zach Edey, and it's just perfect. It's exactly what you could hope for Cameron Boozer at the next level, because he has Edey behind him, protecting him, supporting him. He is able to play big with Edey. Edey can pop, he can roll, Boozer can handle, and then you add like Cedric Coward, Jalen Williams, Gigi Jackson, all these talented, big, long-armed wings. The Grizzlies suddenly look like a team that has everything except for a guard. And I think it's likely from the sources I speak to that Ja Morant is still likely to be traded this offseason, but that's not a guarantee. So if Ja sticks around because there's no good deal out there for the Memphis Grizzlies, this roster looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. And I really like this fit for Cam Boozer if he does indeed land with the Memphis Grizzlies. Number four, the Chicago Bulls. This is another fit that I'm really excited about. You got Caleb Wilson going to the Chicago Bulls with the fourth pick here. I think for the Bulls, this is like, obviously you'd rather be number one, but moving into the top four here, the opportunity to take a guy in Caleb Wilson, who is an elite athlete, probably the best athlete in the whole draft. Sometimes like you squint when you watch Caleb Wilson and like he looks like Giannis sometimes. I mean, like the comparisons on screen here, Evan Mobley, Jonathan Isaac, that's a bit, he's more like Evan Mobley with a real tough guy mentality and like a healthy best case version of Jonathan Isaac. But sometimes there's a little bit of Giannis in him. And so you pair that guy with Josh Giddey and Manus Muzelis and whatever else they get in this draft class as well. Bulls could be really, really good, really, really, really soon. And dude, I mean, the Pacers falling out of the top four. The Clippers get the pick at fifth. Any four of these guys for the Indiana Pacers, DeBonta, Peterson, Boozer, Wilson, would have just been glorious. And part of me understands why the Pacers decided we're going to make it 5-10 protected, because here it's a lot of guards, Keaton Wagler and Acuff and all these guys. I can understand maybe not wanting one of those guys, but boy, what a bummer for the Pacers to lose this pick. And now the Clippers get it. The Clippers end up with the fifth pick in the draft, and I've got them taking Keaton Wagler here. So I don't think there's really another choice that makes any sense for the Clippers here personally, unless they were to move down. I think all the other guards are too small to pair with Darius Garland. I think Keaton Wagler and Garland can grow together. Both those guys can play with and without the ball. Wagler's got some size, 6'6". He's still too skinny. He needs to get stronger, but I think that these guys could work great together. Garland's a hell of a shooter. Wagler, like his step back at times was unstoppable. We saw that 46-point game he had against top-ranked Purdue in the middle of the year. He leads his team to a Final Four. He's a high IQ guy. For the Clippers, I wonder, what does it mean for the Clippers to now be fifth in the draft? Does this mean they will feel comfortable going with a little bit of a rebuild here? Could they actually trade Kawhi Leonard? Could they trade some of their veterans? Or does this mean that they're going to try to trade the pick? Are they going to try to use this pick and double down on the core? I think that would be a bit silly to do, personally. I would go young if I were them, personally. Number six, the Brooklyn Nets. I got them taking Kingston Flemings, a guard. Flemings, to me, like there's a chance he ends up the best guard from this group. And for the Nets, like obviously you're crushed. You're moving down again. And Flemings is not Darren Peterson or Cam Boozer or one of these guys, but he's a good player. I mean, he's a great mid-range shooter. He's got a great first step. He plays hard. He's 6'4". He's a really gritty, tough defender. That's why the player comparisons on screen, Mike Conley, Drew Holiday, like this guy's tough. Like when Flemings was 7 years old, he got run over by a car and like he suffered injuries and he talked about how this was like instilled this mindset that he has in him. And he plays with that toughness, like taking advantage of opportunities. And so I think wherever he lands, including if it's in Brooklyn, he's going to immediately be the best guard prospect on that Nets team. Number seven, I got the Sacramento Kings digging Darius Acuff. And you might be wondering, why not the Nets for Acuff? Why not the Clippers for Acuff? I don't think Acuff and Garland are a great fit together. I think you'd have to move Garland. I think the Nets might go with the tougher defensive-oriented player in Flemings over Acuff. That might be a mistake because Acuff, as you know, landing here at Sacramento with the seventh pick, this guy is a bucket getter. This guy creates shots at will from every inch on the floor. Regardless of what the defense is doing, he can shoot from mid-range, can shoot from three, he can get to the cup. He's a great passer, and he's not like these other on-ball engines that are just selfish players that don't like to move without the ball. He is a mover. He shot almost 50% on catch-and-shoot threes coming off of screens and handoffs, sprints in transition. The dude is a gamer, and that's why when people talk about how garbage his defense is at times, and it is garbage a lot of the time, he plays hard. And I think when he's not handling the ball every single play on offense and has the responsibility of the entire offense on his shoulders like he did in high school and like he did in college at Arkansas, I think you're going to see better defensive effort. Of course, he's smaller. There's concerns there. But look, I think Acuff's a baller. I'm a big fan of him. Number eight, the Atlanta Hawks. Disappointing draft lottery for them. But at number eight, who knows? Maybe it could end up a blessing in disguise. I've got the Hawks taking Adai Mara out of Michigan, national champion. People might be a little surprised to see Mara this high. I don't think so. I think you're going to hear Mara's name in this mid-lottery range more and more in the weeks to come. Mara, to me, is just just so rock solid, and he's exactly one of the things the Hawks need. They need a CJ McCollum successor, and they need a true five. Onyeka Okongwu, as much as I like him, is not that true five, but Mara, with his size at 7'3", 255 pounds, big, massive wingspan, he is just a huge body at the five, defensively, with what he can do as a shot blocker and as a paint protector. Offensively, his feel is just so good. Quinn Snyder loves bigs with dribble handoff actions. We see that with Okongwu, with Jalen Johnson, basically every big he's ever had, minus Rudy Gobert throughout his time coaching with both Utah and Atlanta. He's going to put Mara into actions with these shooters on Atlanta. Now, of course, they got to find some more, and they have another pick later in this draft. We'll see what they do in the late first round. But I'm thinking Mara here for the Hawks. Number nine, the Dallas Mavericks. They move down, but I still think the Mavericks can get a quality guard to pair with Cooper Flagg here. And I've got them taking Mychal Brown out of Louisville. Mychal Brown, to me, is one of those players where if he didn't suffer back injuries throughout his freshman year, there's a real chance that he ends up closer to the top five. And maybe through pre-draft workouts, he could play himself into that as well. Because with Mychal Brown, the highs from this guy, he scored 45 points in the middle of February. And his when he's on, his pull-up jumper from any spot on the floor cannot be stopped. He's around 6'4", 6'5", with a high release. He finishes at the rim. Sometimes he looks like Manu Ginobili. That's why I got the comp for him. I think it's a little unfair, or Jamal Crawford type to a lesser extent. But the ambidextrous finishing ability, putting English on the ball, spinning it off the backboard, the dude is amazing. He's an incredible finisher. He's a good passer, makes quick decisions. He does these jump passes out of pick and roll as well. He puts velocity on the ball. It's just he was hurt. And he kind of, you know, he left his high school team early as well. He ended his college season early as well. So there's some intel stuff to figure out with Mychal Brown. But I think for the Mavericks, if you pair Cooper Flagg with Mychal Brown long-term, this feels like a guard-forward tandem that could really thrive together with their ability to both play on-ball and off-ball. That said, Masai Ujiri has long had a thing for big, long-armed forwards. I'm talking like Kareem Lopez, Yaxel Lendenborg, Nate Amentz, guys like that. And so maybe we're looking at this wrong, and maybe Masai Ujiri instead sticks to that philosophy next to Cooper Flagg. So we'll see. But for now, I have Mychal Brown going to the Mavericks with the ninth pick. Number 10, the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, look, it's going to be a big summer ahead. I'm just trying to think, like, off the top of my head here, the top 10. Are there any teams ahead of the Bucks that would trade a pick for Giannis? The Bulls at 4? Maybe the Bulls? How about the Jazz? The Jazz at 2? The Clippers at 5, that's not enough. They don't have enough assets. The Nets at 6, I don't think that's enough to entice the Bucks, but it could be, depending on what else is up there. The Hawks, I don't think Giannis would want to go to the Hawks. But still, at number 10, I mean, regardless of what happens on lottery with Giannis, the Bucks at 10, and I have them taking Nate Amentz. This just feels like a John Horst pick to me. Horst loves these raw, long-armed, tall players. Thon maker. but not just Thon. He's done it a lot over the years. Nate Amentz just feels like a swing. This is a team entering a new era, post-Giannis in all likelihood. John Horst has a new contract extension. He's locked up. He has the trust of ownership, it seems. Maybe take a risk. Nate Amentz feels like a more likely choice to me than some of the remaining options on the table, some of the guards that are out there. And we'll be right back after this break. Number 11, the Golden State Warriors. Steve Kerr re-signed with Golden State. So good for him having the 11th pick here. Kareem Lopez. I got Lopez going to the Warriors. This is, to me, a really good fit for the Kerr system. Lopez is a hard-nosed, tough player, a versatile player. I think the Aaron Gordon comp, that's a lane for him to try to aspire to become over the course of time, because at 6'8", with strength and size and beef to him, he can handle the ball a bit, he can pass a bit. He's just a do-it-all guy. It reminds me of Gordon when Gordon was coming out of college at Arizona, Gordon was just like a significantly better athlete. He was an all-world athlete, as you know, with the dunk contest stuff that Gordon does. But that player type is the vision for him. And so for Golden State, Steve Kerr signed a 2-year contract extension with the Warriors, and I'm sure he's disappointed that the Warriors didn't get lottery luck. But, you know, with the 11th pick here, it's an opportunity for the Warriors to add another good young guy or maybe trade that pick. And with Kerr, what I'm most fascinated by here is there was the leaks from the Warriors side of things that said, we want Kerr to evolve, integrate some more layers to his offense. Is that going to happen? And could that dictate what Mike Dunleavy and the Warriors front office does with this selection? Are they going to still build young and take a raw player? Or maybe they take a Yaxel Lendenborg type, an older guy who's more ready to contribute in theory. More to come there with Steve Kerr, but it took him a long time to decide. Maybe he was just waiting on getting his biggest contract in history of coaches. He was already the highest paid coach in the history of basketball at $17.5 million. We don't yet know the exact number for what he signed for, but hey, I wonder if I'm 50-50 about coming back was just negotiating the whole time. It might have been, considering the how much they were touting he's the highest paid coach ever and still the highest paid coach in basketball. So good for Kerr, possibly good for the Warriors. We'll see there if he actually does evolve. And I'm rooting for Steph. I'm rooting for Draymond to be able to win in these latter years, whether it's a title or just compete. So I love when the Warriors are good. I miss them being good. Number 12. The Oklahoma City Thunder. How happy were you guys when the Oklahoma City Thunder did not move up in the lottery? I was a little bit sad, if I'm being honest. I wanted to see the chaos, but I still think there's a chance for chaos with the 12th pick. And here's why. Look at what they're sitting on. They are sitting on a mountain of assets, a big pile of future first-round draft picks. They have 8 players under contract who are going to be free agents either this summer or next summer. There's going to be roster turnover in Oklahoma City. AJ Mitchell, we just saw him have a double-double in game 3 against the Lakers on Saturday night, and he was incredible. They look fine without Jalen Williams. What happens if the Thunder say, we'll give you the 12th pick and AJ Mitchell? How far can they move up? Can they move up to 6? Can they move up to 7? What if they say, we'll give you AJ Mitchell and Lu Dort in the 12th pick, and both future Nuggets first rounders, and we'll give you these 3 second round picks. Can they get to number 4? These are things worth thinking about. I don't know if a team would be willing to trade down that far, but the Thunder can put a lot on the table. Now, with the 12th pick here, I have them taking Yaxel Lendenborg, national champion from Michigan, 24 years old, a little bit older than maybe you would expect the Thunder to go with this pick, and maybe they won't end up going in this direction. I just think Yaxel, even though he's 24, offers so much upside. I still think with 6'9", 7'4" wingspan, he's somebody that can come in right away, offer bench minutes, and allow the Thunder to, you know, kick the can forward with value, flipping a Lu Dort for 2 future first-round draft picks, playing Lendenborg as a rookie. And then plus they also need, like, if there's one thing the Thunder are missing, it's this 6'8", 6'9", long-armed, strong, 240-pound forward like Yaxel Lendenborg. To me, he fits a need, but he also provides upside with everything that he can do. And I mean, if you guys watched the tournament, you saw him get hurt and yet play through it. He has a toughness to him. Like, this is a guy who, he had terrible grades in high school. He had to go to a JUCO college, and then he went to UAB, and then he entered the draft after last season, went through the combine, got feedback, pulled his name out, came back for another year at Michigan, and he wins a national title. Every step of the way, this guy got better when the competition got tougher. And I'm not going to be surprised if the same thing happens in the NBA, to be honest with you. Number 13, the Miami Heat. This is a little bit of a curveball here, but I've got the Heat taking Dalen Swain out of Texas. Hear me out. I think you're going to see somebody rise this year through the pre-draft process. It might be Swain. It might be Merez Johnson. It might be Chris Sinak. It might be Amari Allen or Cameron Carr. There's going to be somebody who we're not talking about as a late lottery pick today that becomes a late lottery pick. And Swain, to me, is a prime candidate for that, especially given the way the board fell. Smart teams, Warriors, Thunder, Heat, Hornets. These are teams that have really good front offices and teams that value length and versatility. What does Swain have? A long wingspan, playmaker on defense, downhill attacker on offense, willing passer, talented scorer, just can't shoot. That's it. He just can't shoot. He's a crappy shooter with ugly mechanics. But if he figures out the shot and if he proves this week at the NBA draft combine and then through pre-draft workouts, hey, my shot's better, this guy's going to fly up boards. He just feels like a likely candidate to me. And that's why I've got the Heat taking him here. I just look at the other options. Braden Burries, Filon, Hannes Steinbeck. I don't think Cameron Carr, I don't think any of these names necessarily outweigh the upside of Dalen Swain out of Texas. Number 14, Braden Burries. I got him going to Charlotte here. I think for the Hornets, they're in a position where they could go a ton of different directions. Charlotte is a team that they don't need a guard necessarily, but I look at this as LaMelo Ball insurance. If LaMelo starts suffering injuries again, or if LaMelo decides to be, or if the Hornets decide, we're going to flip LaMelo because Burries has come along. Burries, to me, like, he's just so tough. He gets to the rim. He plays hard. And I think he kind of offers something different from the rest of the Hornets. Con Knipple's a shooter. Brandon Miller is a shooter and a mid-range guy. LaMelo Ball, perimeter guy, doesn't get to the rim a lot. Well, Burries suddenly is the at-rim guy, the downhill attacker, the strong bowling ball driver. He offers a different vibe for this Hornets team. So I like this pick. That's our lottery. That's our top 14. Let's move on to the 15th pick. We're out of the lottery here, guys. The Chicago Bulls. I got the Bulls taking LeBaron Filon. They had Caleb Wilson with the 4th pick. Here they get their guard. Now, with Chicago, they took a ton of guards last year at the trade deadline. They have had 7 guards on the roster. None of them are as good of prospects as LeBaron Filon. And so if you have Filon joining a team with Caleb Wilson and Josh Giddey and Matas Bouzelis, he's surrounded by size and length and versatility. Filon, to me, I think could just thrive in Chicago with what they're building here. Now they need to hire a new coach, but if I'm a head coach candidate, I'm looking at Chicago and I'm like, this might be the best job out there. I think the Bulls, I'm curious about you guys. Leave me a comment. Let me know. Are the Bulls the best job available all of a sudden? Has it exceeded the Magic or any other potential openings? Because I think the Bulls might be the number one job opening right now, based on the fact they got the number 4 pick and they have the 15th pick. So 2 top 15 picks in a really good draft class. At number 16, the Memphis Grizzlies on the board again after I had them taking in the lottery Cameron Boozer. Let's go with another kind of bigger guy here. Allen Graves. Allen Graves out of Santa Clara, to me, is a fascinating prospect. Graves is a lottery darling. Graves is a analytics darling. Anytime you look at an analytics-driven board from the draft community, Graves is like top 5. And the Grizzlies historically have been an analytics-driven front office with some of the choices they've made. And so Graves is a knockdown shooter. He's a tough, gritty defensive player. He grew up playing point guard before he had a late growth spurt, so he still retains that passing skill. I think with what the Grizzlies are building, they have Zach Edey. You hope he can continue to stay healthy. In this mock, they have Cameron Boozer. Then you add Allen Graves and Gigi Jackson and Cedric Coward. You're building a long-arm skilled team with size and versatility with all a bunch of guys who can pass, dribble, and shoot. And that, to me, is one of the formulas we're seeing that the Spurs have, that the Thunder have. It's what the Pacers had last year. It's what the Celtics had when they won the finals. It's 5 guys on the floor that can do everything. And that, like, both of these picks for the Grizzlies, I think, kind of fit that aspect that we're talking about here with Memphis. Number 17, The Oklahoma City Thunder. The Oklahoma City Thunder. Let's see. We had Jaxel Lendenborg at number 12 for the Grizzlies. Let's go with another, along the same lines, let's go with another guy that can fill the void for some of these guys that are inevitably going to lose in the coming year and a half through free agency. Merez Johnson out of Michigan. Merez Johnson, to me, is one of my favorites. I love Merez Johnson. I'm one of the guys buying stock. This dude is just so tough, plays so hard, so versatile. You can use him as a small five. You can use him as a three or a four. He can defend guards. He can defend forwards. He can defend every position. Constantly hustles. Never complains. Never complains when he's not getting touches. I think the dude is a winner. I think he's one of the key reasons why Michigan ended up winning the national championship. And I think if Oklahoma City drafted him, he would be in the situation where this team, historically, what have they done with Chip England, their shooting coach? Successfully taught players how to shoot. I mean, they're the reason why Josh Giddey, now in Chicago, learned how to shoot. And he came in with a broken jumper. And so with Merez Johnson, I think this dude would be a dream fit for Chicago, for Oklahoma City if he lands there. So I've got the OKC taking Jaxel Lendenborg and Merez Johnson in the top 17 here. Up at 18, we have the Charlotte Hornets once again. I have them taking Braden Burries at 14. At 18, let's let the remaining board. Let's go with Chris Cenac for the Charlotte Hornets. I don't love this player team fit because I would rather have like an Adai Mara type, but he wasn't available at 14. I think they need a true big, but Cenac sort of, you know, scratches that itch. He's 6'11". He's got long arms. He's a great athlete. He provides another guy in that rotation with Musa Diabate and Kalkbrenner as well. And he was he was projected as a top 10 guy before the season at Houston. He underwhelmed a bit. He was constantly in foul trouble, but he's a great athlete, a willing perimeter shooter. You want him to play in the interior a little bit more, but I think the athleticism, maybe that could translate for him in Charlotte. He's worth a swing to me somewhere around this range. Number 19, this is the only other guy you could see them going for here if they did want to take a big, but I'll go with Hannes Steinbeck at number 19 for the Toronto Raptors. Hannes, to me, is one of the more intriguing bigs in this entire draft class. He's not a true girthy five. He's only 6'11". He might even measure at less than that combine week. 220 pounds, not 250. And he's probably not going to ever be that, but he's got skill. He's got shooting ability. He's got playmaking ability from the elbow area. He reminds me of like a Vooch or a Sabonis type. I'm a fan of this guy. And I think right here for the Raptors really needed two things. It was very clear the Raptors needed two things in their first round loss to the Cavaliers. They needed another guard. And they needed a five. Steinbeck could be the answer there for the Toronto Raptors at number 19. Number 20, the San Antonio Spurs, about to go all the way to the Western Conference Finals for a date with the with the Oklahoma City Thunder. It's going to be awesome there. I'm very excited to see how that plays out. I think the Spurs here at number 20, I'm going to go with Amari Allen. Amari Allen, to me, is one of the more underrated guys in this year's draft class. Amari Allen is a versatile player. He doesn't have big touches. He isn't somebody who's going to have the ball in his hands. He's a player that defends multiple positions. He cuts to the rim. He plays hard. He shoots threes. He is somebody that doesn't complain when he's not getting touches. And for San Antonio, that's what you need. You need somebody who at pick 20, who fills gaps, who hits spot up threes, who can play the Harrison Barnes role, who, by the way, is a free agent this offseason, and he's older. I like this fit for San Antonio, and it won't surprise me if you see Amari Allen moving up come draft night because of those qualities.
We'll be right back.
Number 21, Cameron Carr to the Detroit Pistons. Carr, to me, is one of these guys, like a lot of these guys in this range. You could see Carr moving up in the draft because we're talking about somebody that has just so much skill, so much size, 6'5". He needs to get heavier. He's only 175 pounds. But Carr, the shooting, the scoring ability, the creation ability, that combination of skills, to me, makes Carr somebody that just can move up easy. And for Detroit here, maybe add another shooter. That would be nice, I'd say, for the Pistons. So I like Carr here for Detroit. And, I mean, look, it can't just be Duncan Robinson and a coin flip for Tobias Harris as shooters. They need more guys. Number 22, Henry Vassar. I have him going to the Philadelphia 76ers. Vassar out of North Carolina. Like, look, you can't trust Joel Embiid to stay healthy. And Joel Embiid's body is ultimately broken. He can't be trusted to stay healthy. It's the type of thing with him, like if he's playing, beautiful, great, awesome. Well, he's not going to play a lot. So you got to find a five. You got to find somebody who can fill those minutes, who can play with him, can play behind him. And Vassar, to me, answers those questions. He's a shooter. He's an athlete. He's got great size. He's gotten better every year of his college career. I think, to me, Vassar is a easy choice for the Sixers here. And it won't surprise me if he's somebody that moves up in the pre-draft process as well. Number 23, the Atlanta Hawks. I get them taking Malik Thomas with this selection. We saw the Hawks in the lottery take a Diamara. Let's find your CJ McCollum successor here in the late first round. Malik Thomas is a bucket getter. We saw him have big games, big moments when Acuff was off the floor and missed a game in March. Thomas isn't like he looks like Halliburton when he shoots the ball. It's kind of like a sort of weird, ugly set shot, but it works. I just love this dude. I think Thomas is underrated. I think with his versatility on ball and off ball, he's the type of guy that is going to be a good long-term NBA player. And so I think for Atlanta here with this selection, it's in an interesting range because for Atlanta, let's say they don't take a big up top. Let's say they instead decide to go with a guard at number 8. There's like Luigi Suigo here. Maybe Hannah Steinbeck falls. Maybe you decide to go in a Malachi Marino direction. Reach for him a little bit in this spot. There's a lot of bigs here. So maybe the Hawks could flip it, take a guard high or a wing high, and then take the best available big here. Different perspective for Atlanta. Speaking about Luigi Suigo, the New York Knicks, number 24. I got the Knicks taking Luigi with the 24th pick here, in part because of team need. Mitchell Robinson will be a free agent this offseason. I don't think Mitchell Robinson can be trusted to stay fully healthy. I don't know if they'd want to pay him the money. And I think Suigo could end up being a better player long-term. This guy is massive, 7'3", big. He's going to grow into that frame, be a very strong, tough interior center. He's got passing ability. He is the type of guy that flashes a three-pointer. We'll see if it works out. But I think over time, this is somebody that you see him in mock drafts right now, sometimes in the second round, sometimes in the first round. I think he's a first-round pick, in my opinion, and I'd be surprised if he doesn't go first round, but we'll see over the course of time. Number 25, the Los Angeles Lakers. I get the Lakers taking Jaden Quaintance here, and I don't think this is their ideal pick. I think they'd rather have one of the other bigs taken above him. I think you could even argue to take Marino out of Kentucky here as well. But I get them taking Quaintance in part because of the seeming likelihood that he's a first-round pick. I don't think he's a first-round pick. I don't think Quaintance has stayed durable. I don't think he looked as explosive as a sophomore at Kentucky compared to what he did as a freshman before. The dude tore up his knee. He suffered so many injuries as a freshman, the ACL, the meniscus, a fractured knee. Maybe he returns to that, but it seems like he's going to go first round for now. And I just think for the Lakers, during game 3, you saw JJ Redick go to the bench and say, I can't play him about DeAndre Ayton. I think they're going to go with a big And maybe it'll be Quaintance, maybe it'll be somebody else. But I'd go with a center here. There's a number of them available for the Los Angeles Lakers. Number 26, the Denver Nuggets. I've got the Nuggets taking Bennett Sturts. I mean, Sturts is a little bit of a faller here. He might go late lottery, might go in the teens. But some of these teams drafting ahead, like are the Knicks or the Hawks or the Sixers or the Pistons or the Spurs, going to take another guard. I think there's going to be some guards that fall. I have Sturts slipping a bit, Christian Anderson slipping. I got Ibuka Okori slipping here. Like, there's a number of guards that you're not seeing go on the board here because of the lack of need for guard. The Nuggets don't need a guard either, but they do need a guy that adds variety to your half-court offense. And you can't just be overly reliant on Jokic. Murray doesn't get a lot of creation, it seems like, right now, unless it's with the Jokic screen. Sturts, to me, is one of those guys that just adds another ingredient to the offense. He adds an ingredient to the team. And he can run pick and roll with Jokic or another big. He can hit spot up threes. He can play off ball. He can cut. He can do a lot. I like that pick for the Nuggets here. I think he'd be a guy who could play right away and help them win. Number 27, the Boston Celtics. Some of the picks on the board right here for Boston. Let's go with Tunde Yesufu. I think Tunde would be an interesting choice here for Boston, because Tunde is one of those guys who could have been a lottery pick if this year went well for him at Baylor, because he's 6'5", downhill attacker. He's a great athlete. Like, that's why I got the Benedict Mathurin, Cam Whitmore comparisons on the draft guide with him. And like, maybe he doesn't work out. Maybe it turns out that he's just an amazing physical specimen, but not a great basketball player. Maybe he never learns how to shoot. Maybe his defense never clicks. But in Boston, that's a team that can afford to swing and miss. And so I think Yesufu is somebody worthy of the upside swing, considering it's the 27th pick in the draft. And they also have had success turning some iffy shooters into quality shooters. So I like that pick for Boston. Number 28, this one's an easy one. I don't know. I mean, you could go with Ibuka Okori here or Christian Anderson. I'll lean toward Christian Anderson at number 28 for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Anderson, to me, just feels more like Mike Conley. Perimeter shooter, point guard, playmaker type. Seems to kind of add some of the variety they need with perimeter shooting. More so, like, they don't need more downhill creation like Okori provides. So I'm going to go Christian Anderson here for the Minnesota Timberwolves out of Texas Tech. He might end up going higher than this. Anderson, to me, is one of these guys where it's going to be, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. He's on the smaller side. He's not a big guard, but like he's just a playmaker. He's a go-getter. He's like plays hard. He makes the right plays on offense. He can complement Anthony Edwards for this team. I'm not as high on him as other people. That's why I have him ranked in the 30s, but I've seen him ranked in the late teens. Again, like, he is somebody that you might love him and think this is too low. Number 29, Coa Pete out of Arizona. I think this for Pete, this would probably be disappointing if he were to fall this far to 29, but maybe it ends up being a blessing in disguise. Because I think, like, let's just look at the Cavaliers. They won game 3. James Harden saved their season. He saved it for the Cavaliers. Turned the clock back. Big game James. Playoff hero James Harden. Most disrespected playoff performer in NBA history. The only player who went toe-to-toe with the Golden State Warriors when they were at their peak juggernaut status. So that's just my little aside about James Harden. Good for him to have a big game 3. Hopefully he has some more big games ahead to make this a competitive series. I don't want all sweeps or gentlemen sweeps. Anyway, Coa Pete, can you just imagine inserting 6'8", tough, hard-nosed, versatile defensive player Coa Pete into a rotation with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen? Pete, to me, would make sense for this Cavaliers team. He could play a little small 5 as a bruiser next to Evan Mobley. He could play as a backup to Jared Allen. You could play like, we're going to crash the boards with 2 bigs, with Coa Pete and Jared Allen. Hey, maybe you play with 3 bigs. Maybe you put Mobley at the 3 in certain lineups, like we've seen Memphis do over the years with Jaren Jackson Jr. and with Pete and Mobley out there. I think this would be an awesome, intriguing fit for the Cavaliers, regardless of what happens with the remainder of this playoff series. Number 30, final pick of the first round, the Dallas Mavericks. I get the Mavericks taking Isaiah Evans out of Duke. Now, I think they could go a ton of different directions here. There are still guards on the board. Ubuka Okori would make a lot of sense here, I think, for them as well. But they still have Kyrie. Maybe you wait one more year to draft a guard. There's always guards. I think Isaiah Evans, with his size at 6'6", his versatility as a defensive player, he had like 12 blocks on three-pointers this year. I know he had the horrible moment in the tournament when he just failed to contest Braylon Mullins on the three-pointer. It may not have mattered. The dude's a pretty good defensive player. He's a sharpshooter from three. He got a lot better as a sophomore at getting downhill. And so you put him in this Mavericks team that has Cooper Flagg at the center of it, next to Michael Brown in the backcourt. Learn from Kyrie Irving. Add some other players this offseason as well. Find some other rookies to bring in too. The Mavericks could be looking pretty good, especially if Derek Lively can come back and stay healthy, which that's a big if. That is a big, big if for the Dallas Mavericks, for sure. That's our first round. I mean, I think of the names that didn't make it to me, I think Ubuka Okori, I have him ranked way higher. I'm a big Okori guy. I think with his skill level, he should be in the top 20-ish. Okori, to me, is a guy that could end up a star. I wouldn't rule that out at all. I think Billy Richmond out of Arkansas, he is a 6'6", tough wing. He's got everything besides the jumper, but everything besides the shot, but he's an elite athlete. I love Billy Richmond. I think this could be a big week at the NBA draft combine for him. Tyler Tanner, another guard. Tanner, not in the first round here in this mock draft. Tanner could fly up boards. I don't care that he's 5'11 or 6 feet, whatever he measures at. The dude plays big. He plays tall. He is somebody that is an impactful defensive player. He's like, what if Jose Alvarado could shoot threes? That's what Tyler Tanner could be. And so in this first mock, I have Tanner falling out of the first round. But you bet, like in a week from now, there's a chance Tanner is in the top 20. So he's one of those types of guys. I think, you know, who was some of those? Malachi Marino. I had him in the first round last mock. I got a little bit of mixed feedback from NBA teams about that. Some said, yeah, he belongs there. Others said, maybe early second instead. He worked out for the Knicks. He's got some other workouts as well. He could be a first round draft pick. So I say Marino is another guy that is worthy of first round. But I think what we're kind of hitting on here when it comes to this, the nature of this year's draft class, I think the top 17-ish kind of then begins to dip a little bit. I think around 17, 18, 19, there's a slight dip, but it's not like a huge sudden decline. It's a subtle decline. And it really flattens out, I'd say, until like the 40s or so. This year, these names, Billy Richmond, Malachi Marino, those guys might end up going 17th. Tyler Tanner might be the 18th pick in the draft, but on mocks today, he might be 36. And so there's a lot that's going to change. That's why sometimes when I see people make posts online, like people who do draft stuff like I do, and they say, I'm done watching film. It's over. The evaluation's over. We're just getting started, baby. We're just getting going. The draft combine hasn't even begun. Who's gotten better since the end of the college season? Who's added new skills? Who shines in the scrimmages on Wednesday and Thursday? Who decides after being so dominant on Wednesday, they sit out on Thursday because they got a first-round promise? The evaluation continues. That's it for the first round today. Tomorrow, we're going to dive deeper into the winners and losers. I have a very, very, very special guest coming on to talk NBA draft and a whole lot else. We'll talk about the NBA playoffs as well tomorrow on the show. We get a loaded week. Today, the mock. Monday, another pod. Tuesday, another pod. Thursday as well. It's a busy time here. Have a good Sunday, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the lottery. I hope you're happy with your team's result. Big thank you to Emmy and the whole team for producing today's episode, especially this weekend on Sunday. Hope you have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow. Mm-hmm.